Good evening and welcome to the Late Debate with Cormac O'Hara. Recently, Ireland's been forced to defend its corporate taxation policy under international scrutiny.
And I'm telling you that Ireland does not do special deals or side deals with any company in regard to our corporate tax rate.
Will the state be forced to change its method of attracting multinationals? First the news with Ray Kennedy.
Thank you and good evening from the newsroom. The US President Barack Obama has said he was ready to take targeted and precise military action in Iraq if necessary, following the swift advance of radical Islamic fighters. He said Washington was prepared to send up to 300 military advisers to study how to train and equip Iraqi forces. However, President Obama ruled out sending combat troops, insisting there was no military solution to the fighting. There have been calls on the Fianna Fáil spokesperson on justice, Niall Collins, to quit his position after he sought leniency on behalf of a 40-year-old Limerick man convicted of possession of cannabis worth almost €18,000. Deputy Collins has insisted his intervention was based on compassion and concern for the defendant's four young children. The Taoiseach Enda Kenny has described the communication as a serious matter. It's understood that executives from Dan Morrissey Limited, a quarrying and concrete production company, are to go to the High Court tomorrow to have the company placed in examinership rather than receivership. The company employs 160 people at its sites in County Carlow and Wicklow. Today, receivers from Grant Thornton said that Dan Morrissey Limited had ceased trading. Fergal Brown Cahirlock of Carlow County Council said the effects of the jobs would be widely felt.
We'd have a huge impact for the employees, many of whom are married and would have generations of the same family working in the firm. And Dan Morrissey Limited have played a huge role, not just economically, but also in supporting local GAA clubs and other local organisations.
The former Minister for Justice, Alan Shatter, has attacked the findings of the Guerin report, which criticised how he, his department and the Gardaí handled allegations by whistleblowers. In the Dáil, Mr Shatter criticised the barrister, Sean Guerin, for not interviewing him. He said the report had made his position as minister untenable and that Mr Guerin had rushed to judgment. And the weather forecast: clear overnight with lowest temperatures 9 to 12 degrees, mist and fog patches towards dawn. Dry tomorrow with sunny spells. Highest temperatures 16 to 21 degrees. Warmest in the south. Cormac.
Gurmila Mahagath, Ray, you're listening to The Late Debate with Cormac O'Hara, standing in this evening for Audrey. Joining me in studio is Áine Collins of Fine Gael, Lucinda Creighton of the Reform Alliance, Independent TD Matty McGrath, Trevor O'Clocherty of Sinn Féin, and Jim Stewart, Associate Professor of Finance with Trinity College Dublin. You can contact the programme by text on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie, and on Twitter, latedebate.rte. Later in the programme, we'll ask if Ireland's corporate tax regime is soft on multi-billion euro companies located here. But first this evening we'll turn our attention to the Niall Collins letter. There have been calls for Fianna Fáil's front bench spokesperson on justice, Niall Collins, to resign his front bench position as a result of a letter he wrote in relation to a man awaiting sentence for drugs offences. Lucinda Creighton, is this a black or white issue for you?
Yes, it is. I don't believe that Oireachtas members should interfere in the judicial process in the courts or in sentencing. And I mean, we have a fairly long history of these sort of issues arising from time to time. Generally speaking, there has been negativity and often outrage when TDs chose to involve themselves in matters before the courts. And I think rightly so. I thought the practice had stopped. I maybe was wrong about that. But I think that Niall Collins exercised very poor judgment in getting involved in this.
You're saying there should be a blanket ban on all public service representation in terms of these cases?
Absolutely. I think that the judiciary is and ought to be entirely independent. I don't believe that it's appropriate for representations to be made by public representatives of the nature that Niall Collins made in
why,
this case.
Why? What's wrong with making the court aware of the difficult circumstances of a defendant or of an accused?
There's nothing wrong with making the court aware, and that's the role of solicitors and barristers, and every person has the right to...
Am I right in saying that this letter came came through the barrister, came through the defence
barrister. But it was from a TD, that's the point. And I think, I mean, for me it is absolutely black and white, to go back to your original question.
Can I just ask you, what is the difference between, for example, a doctor or a teacher or a leading member of society standing up or issuing a document in court through the barrister and saying, I know this man's circumstances, in mitigation, he is of good character, he's changed his life, or whatever the case may be. What is the difference between a doctor, a teacher, or a leading public figure saying that, as opposed to a politician?
The difference is that politicians are elected by the people. Politicians should be, and are, in theory at least, separate from the judicial system. TDs have influence. They are legislators. They are policy makers. And in many instances, you know, there is the very clear risk that they would unduly influence the view of a member of the judiciary. And we already know in this case that sentencing was deferred. And my understanding that was on foot of the letter from Niall Collins. So I think it's a clear example of why it's inappropriate.
Matty McGraw, are you in agreement?
I am, yes. And I'm surprised with Niall. Maybe this was a lapse of judgment, because we can go back to the Bobby Mulally case, you know, good many years ago now. There's a clear line between, you know, as Lucinda said, we're expected to be the law makers, you know, and the judiciary has to interpret that law and administer justice set out by those laws. So, you know, a reference may be one thing to give somebody a reference if you knew him well or whatever, but asking anyway commenting or cajoling or asking or requesting lenient sentence, no matter what the circumstances are.
He said in a statement today there were exceptional circumstances in the case, as the four children of the defendant lost their mother through suicide earlier this year, and he believe that the judge should be made aware of these tragic circumstances. But what's wrong with that?
As Lucinda said, that's the job of the men's barrister, his legal team, to do that, and, you know, to argue that case out. And I'm sure
did that through this letter.
Yes, but it was a letter from a TD, and as I said, people have fallen on the sword for lesser situations before. We're asked all the time to give references. I am in my clinic, you know, on a weekly basis, and you know, people, you do give a reference, and a reference is one thing, you know, to give a reference of character, but what about
court cases?
No, because especially in any court case like that, especially, what about the many children that are afflicted by the scourge of drugs and the drugs that the people are going selling and supplying? You know, I accept totally the circumstances relating to the family that lost their mother, but
do you accept Niall Collins when he says that he did this solely on compassionate grounds?
But he made a mistake. He erred in my view. With all that's gone on in recent years, I think it's taboo. I mean, my staff in my office and myself are acutely aware. Any issue like this is red flagged, and you don't go near it.
Trevor O'Clocherty.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say nobody would call Niall Collins kind of a shrinking violet, and that if the shoe was on the other foot, and if any of us were in the situation that he's in, he would actually be the first person probably to be out there front and centre saying it shouldn't be done. Because not only, I think it's interesting to look at the compassionate grounds that a citizen out there listening to the very, very sad scenario that we've been presented, and we don't know all the facts in the case, but, you know, there seems to be a very compassionate case there, would say, well, you know, somebody needs to make that case, but it is right to say that should come through the legal representation. But the fact of the matter is that Niall Collins wasn't just a TD. He was he's the justice spokesperson for Fianna Fáil, so he should know better. You know, so he really does need to act appropriately in this scenario, because it really is unacceptable. And I think it's important, just again, to reiterate for people that there is a very strong separation between the legislature and the judiciary, for very good reason, because we are the people entrusted with making the laws, the judiciary are the people entrusted with adjudicating on the law, and we have to have full confidence in the judiciary to do that job properly and take all issues into account.
51551, if you have a question or a statement to make on this particular topic. Áine Collins of Fine Gael, I assume you agree with the rest of the panel.
Yes, I think Niall Collins should resign. I think it was lack of judgment. I'm sure his senior counsel and his legal team could have brought in child psychiatrists, social workers, doctors to make representation. I have read the case today, and I understand the circumstances are very tragic, but there is no place for politicians to be writing letters to judges asking them to be lenient. And as far as I'm concerned, I thought that day was in our history books and not happening in today's environment.
You're asking Niall Collins to resign his front bench position.
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
Even though you stood by Alan Shatter when there were question marks over how some things were run within his department and how some investigations were run by the Garda under his nose.
There was some question marks, and we are waiting for some of those reports still to come out. We had the GSOC report, or the report that came out yesterday, and we heard the remarks on that today. But he didn't interfere in a judicial case, which is a completely separate issue, and that has now been dealt with. You asked me an opinion on Niall Collins and what happened today, and I'm giving you my view on that.
Are you playing politics with this issue?
No, I'm not. I think it's a very serious issue, and I do not think that we need to be going back to that place where Ireland was for many years, and it's taken a long and lengthy process to get us into a place where it's now separate, and the judicial system should always be separate from politics.
Do you give any credence whatsoever to what he said, that it was based solely on compassionate grounds for the children?
I think there's many other ways he could have dealt with that.
How?
As I said, you could have got social workers involved, you could have got a psychiatric report in, and you could have, I'm sure the senior counsel in relation to this case are very competent people and know how to deal with these situations. It certainly wasn't a place for a politician, and it has been said he's a front bench spokesperson for justice for Fianna Fáil, so I think
it's not better. Can I just say, I mean, it's standard practice that there's a plea in mitigation in any sentencing for any sort of conviction of this sort. So, I mean, it happens as a matter of course on almost every occasion, and that's the service that the legal representatives, solicitors, barristers provide for their clients. So there was no need. That's the bottom line. There was no need for a TD to get involved in this.
But I'm just wondering if politicians are jumping on this without context, because the Limerick Post reported that a peace commissioner said that the defendant was a terrific father to his four children since their mother died. It was a tragic outcome, and the whole village had rallied around him in support.
Cormac, if you were saying that we were playing politics, what you have to do is look at the reaction of his own party colleagues, and even Micheál Martin hasn't come out to defend the actions of Niall Collins in this scenario. If it was just us playing politics, we would be accused of being playing politics by Micheál Martin. So I certainly think.
But what about that? What about the context given by the peace commissioner in that just the quotation that I read there? Well, does that change anything?
No,
I accept that. The peace commissioner is entitled to make his comments, and he needed to give a reference of it. It seems to be like more so there. I don't know if he wrote directly to the justice. I think what Niall Collins did was writing to the eminent justice, and I think that's a line you don't cross, because at that stage your legislature is breaking into the...
My understanding is that it was a letter by Niall Collins given to the barrister of the defendant. Is that right?
And then furnished
to the
court. Yeah, I mean, it was for a particular purpose, and I think that's the issue here. And I mean, let's remember that at the same time as we're discussing this, there's also a discussion about how the judiciary lobby, the political class, how they lobby how members of the legal profession lobby for a judicial appointment and so on. And, you know, there's a major question mark as to how appropriate that is.
Yes.
Judges seeking promotion and so on, and something that the Chief Justice herself has spoken about in recent weeks. So, I mean, it works both ways. And I think, you know, we've had far too much of a grey area in respect
of
the interaction
and that's
between
a question I want to raise
the legislature
with you.
And the court system many years.
Do we also have a grey area, Lucinda Creighton, just on this matter, on these types of letters? Is what Niall Collins did against the law?
No, but you could argue that it's very much against the spirit of the Constitution.
But hold on a second here. You're saying it's not against the law, but yet he's being castigated by his fellow parliamentarians. Where is the clarity in the law then? If this is obviously wrong, why hasn't the legislator dealt with it?
Well, that's a fair point, and perhaps now legislation needs to be considered. But I mean, you could also argue that that the various acts of Alan Shatter as Minister for Justice were not against the law. But I mean, as office holders, we all have responsibilities to behave in a particular way, and I think that Niall Collins actually breached those responsibilities.
But in Niall Collins, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, Niall Collins was obviously, this case was brought before him. He looked at or envisaged the four children, and according to his statement, compassionate grounds came to the forefront of his mind. Mm. Now, if there is no law against it, and if his intentions were good, what's wrong with that?
Well, I think it's important to look at precedent. And as Matty has said, there have been TDs who've done similar things who have resigned their seats as a matter of course. Now, it's important to note that actually John Crown yesterday in the Shannon brought this issue up, because he brought a private member's bill forward on this particular issue, and the government parties voted against it. So there was the opportunity there within the last year to bring forward legislation, and the government turned it down.
Anya, you're crying foul now, but your party voted against it in the Shannon.
Yes, they did vote against it, and again, maybe we need to look at it in the future and see what we need to do to change this.
Well, sure, you're talking out of the two sides of your mouth there.
Well, you know, I still think that what happened is wrong, and maybe we do need to look at it. But I mean,
why didn't you get your colleagues to vote for it then? Why didn't you get your colleagues in the Shannon to vote for the bill?
Because I'm sure the bill wasn't, they didn't feel it was the appropriate bill to vote for. I don't have the
You're
bill
sure
in front
about
of me.
That?
Well, I can't say for definite because I don't have it in front of me. But can I just say that in every court in the country, there's a compassionate case every week and every day that needs to be dealt with. And if we start going back to those practices, we will be lobbied every day to write to the judge and to plead mitigating circumstances or human grounds or and all of those
you
issues.
Will be. And do you know what?
And
you
I'm
will,
not
you
sure.
will. You will continue. Even you will continue to be lobbied to represent and send letters on behalf of defendants and other people.
Yes.
Why? Because you haven't dealt with it as a party and as a parliament. And you were presented with an opportunity to deal with this for once and for all. And your colleagues in Fine Gael and other parties voted against that bill in the Shannon.
But there's also, I mean, OK, maybe there isn't a law there, but there's a principle there. And there's a principle when we sign...
Forget the principle for a second.
Yes.
Why not bring in the law?
Well, as I said, we can look at it and I've no problem
you
with looking at it.
You had an opportunity to look at it.
Well, I wasn't in the Shannon, you know, so I can't...
Did you not ask your colleagues?
No, I didn't.
Why not?
Because I wasn't aware of it until now.
Was it not important enough?
Well, I'm not saying that it wasn't important enough. We deal with an awful lot of legislation and some of it never comes before our area. So, you know, I'm just saying I wasn't aware of it.
A texter says, I'm not a Fianna Fáil supporter, but I think the fact that Niall was so open in court with his letter, the best interests were at the core of his thinking, says that texter. Another texter says, this is mad. We should not outlaw compassion in TDs and we should trust our judges. Matty McGraw.
Yes, certainly. But look, I mean, its precedent has been set for this type of activities in the past, as I said, with Bobby Milliner. One or escapes me at the moment. But get back to the private members bill of John Crown. And his Deputy Shane Ross, my independent colleague, brought forward a bill about judicial appointments as well. And it was rejected. So, I mean, I have this bill, you know, tomorrow we'll discuss it later. The government, while they brought in this private situation where private backbenchers can bring in private members legislation, they have a habit of voting against. And I find, especially now, I only found this out during the week, that especially justice, above all places in the world, have a history of not, you know, accepting private members or being kind of a, I won't say closed shop, but be not receptive to new ideas, new thinking. And we saw what went on in justice under this minister, indeed under several ministers before that, I suppose. But so it's a pity. I mean, we can't be speaking out of both sides of a mouth when there was an opportunity for legislation.
Is that what's happening, this in Creighton? Why the inertia on the government side on this issue?
I don't know is the honest answer. I mean, I also supported Shane Ross's bill on the independence of the judiciary and removing the appointment of judges on the grounds of what party they happen to be a member of. I think it's a very worthwhile piece of legislation, and it's something that the government should introduce. If we're talking about, you know, transparency, openness, ending cronyism, etc., in the public sphere, then these are the types of radical changes that need to be made. And it's unfortunate that the government seems to reject all of them out of hand.
But the truth of the matter, Cormac, as well, is that the government has talked the talk on reform, but they haven't really delivered. I mean, if you look at the Shannon reform, it's non-existent, to be honest. If you look at the cronyism in the West Northwest Hospital Group and the chair that was appointed there, that was cronyism, one could argue as well, you know. So we haven't really seen any great reform from this government, even though there was an awful lot of talk about it.
Adrian in Galway says, Niall is a fine TD, but he must resign. He has stepped over the mark. Bobby Molloy did it over a decade ago, and he too was a fine TD here in Galway. Mm-hmm. Bobby made a mistake in making representation an illegal case and resigned the following day. Constituents must know they can't lobby TDs and these matters of law, he says. You have one final point on this, Matty McGraw.
Well, the constituents will always lobby, unless you have to be discerning in what you do with the lobbyists and tell them what the situation is. What I wanted to add there was about this government came to power, or swept to power really, and a new era, fresh thinking, fresh politics. But there have been, as has been said by other speakers, the cronyism is unbelievable. And I've said umpteen times in the House on the record, it's as if this government are punishing the electorate for keeping them out of power for 14 years. They filled every judicial post, they filled every quango, and they were going to get rid of quangos. They have been unbelievable, brash and bullish in putting their own people in. And we saw this week with the banking inquiry, or last week we had with the banking inquiry, when the Senate, when Enda failed to get rid of it, when he didn't do what he wanted, then he just messed up with the
this issue, and I'll go to all of the politicians on the panel on this one. Have you ever made representations on behalf of anyone before the courts or in connection with the Gardaí? Matty McGraw.
Well, I'm hand in heart, I'd have to say I have. Not no point in saying I haven't. But
what's
I,
the difference then?
No, I mean, I said I had given references to people, but I've never written directly to a judge, which I understand is a difference. Or whatever way it got there, I would never write to a judge.
Sorry.
Or contact the judge.
Sorry, hold on. No.
Or a barrister to try and influence a sentence.
What exactly have you written a reference for somebody who's before
know.
The courts?
Yeah, I mean, usually juveniles, and when their parents come to you with a situation, you know when.
And what have you said?
Just that I know this family, and I mean, look, it's but for the grace of God, go any of us in our juvenile years or those years, and it's you know, to just to give.
They weren't all juveniles, were they?
Well, most of them, yeah, to be fair.
Yeah,
most of them come to your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember cases that, but I mean, we were often approached like this. But
so, sorry, what's the difference between what you've done and what Niall Collins has done?
I never wrote to a judge. My letter never got in front of a judge to ask them to be, not
so,
to...
So where did your letter go?
It might have went to a superintendent, it might have went to a reference to
the
family.
So it affected a prosecution or a prospective prosecution?
No, it didn't. It might be JLO system or whatever. I'm not saying I'm whiter than white, that I never...
But you don't know for sure. It may have affected
I'm certain that it never was addressed or found itself addressed to a judge.
How are you certain about that?
I would be very, very, because of the Bobby Malai instance and others.
But you have written a letter.
References.
Yeah.
I give references to people all the time.
And they were sent to either, to the defence barrister or defence solicitor, is that right?
No, they were for a family reference, for a family that I would know, and just to give a general reference.
Trevor.
Not to do anything with a court case.
Haven't.
Never?
No.
Ever?
No.
In relation to anything?
No, and I'm a rookie senator and I'm not long on the in Leinster House, but it's one of the things you do realise very quickly, and it's one of the things I would have been warned about, is you have to be absolutely clear about the separation between the judiciary and...
Lucinda Creighton of the Reform Alliance, have you done so?
Absolutely not, and I have been asked to, but under no circumstances.
Even in relation to someone who's in connection with or before Gardaí?
No. Never. I mean, I believe that the Gardaí and the judiciary need to do their job, and I'll do mine, and I don't believe that they should.
Anya Collins.
No, I haven't. Sorry, no, I haven't.
Okay, Fáilte mo tuigeadh, Sinéad. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more.
RTE Radio 1.
As one listener did in relation to the Niall Collins letter, he or she said, it is the job of the relevant legal professional to show compassion in a courtroom, not politicians. I am so disappointed in Niall Collins, says that listener. 51551. A scrap and precious metal bill will be brought before the Dáil tomorrow to deal with a problem that has been highlighted in the media recently. The recurrent theft and resale of scrap and precious metals has blighted some communities across Ireland, as Valerie Cox of the Today with Sean O'Rourke show recently found out on a recent visit to the Tower Hill estate in Sligo.
Now, we're just coming here into your kitchen. Why is the back door boarded up?
Last Sunday morning, I got a call from a neighbour that the glass is broken in the back door. I came down here and it was very upsetting.
There's no water in your house. Why?
There is no water here because before Christmas, a number of properties were broken into, mine being one of them, and the water cylinders were stolen from the houses. So there's no water here.
And you're afraid to replace it in case it's taken again?
In case it's taken again, yeah.
So how are you surviving?
We're just using buckets of water every day.
You couldn't be bothered doing anything anymore.
There were 15 houses just before Christmas, 15 houses, and the tanks were taken out of them. All the copper cylinders were stolen out of them.
So now some of your neighbours, they're afraid to reinstall them, and they're operating without water tanks.
Oh, yeah, they won't reinstall them. There's a man across the road, he's got pain in his arse fixing windows, and he won't fix them anymore.
And that was Valerie Cox talking to people at the Tower Hill estate in Sligo. Matty McGrath, you're bringing forward this bill tomorrow. Why exactly?
It's my second time. It's an amended bill, first brought forward in 2011, because this problem is widespread throughout the country, town and country, no place is spared. The violation of people's homes on an hourly basis, or more often than that even, not the same homes, but robberies. And two things the Gardaí will tell you when people break into a house, they're looking for, there might be only 2 minutes in a house or three, cash or jewellery. And a simple fact, the cash you can't do anything about, but the jewellery can be put into an envelope the day after or that day, if it's still at post time, and post it to a cash for gold outlet and get back cash in the post. It's the only industry or business in this country I'm aware of that is such lax legislation. None. My bill is trying to deal with that, to stop people's homes being violated. You heard that there now. They take everything. I mean, I know of a house recently near Turles where they spent a lot of money, a dream home, within a day and 2 days of moving into it, and people moved in and took every item of equipment, from the cylinders to the radiators to the taps, the bat, the sinks, the stove, cleaned out.
What's the greater problem, though? Is it scrap or is it precious metal?
The two, and that's why the bid embraces both. Precious metal, obviously, and especially with sentimental issues and your gold or silver, whatever rings you have, or whatever, that's a huge issue and one part of it. But the scrap then, because of the fact of the recession and the fact that scrap has gone up, metals have gone up hugely in value, and it's open season, and you know, you got the taste of it there. Go on to any farm or agricultural area, like farmers have to put rocks, you know, with machine to go to an old farm. The gates will be cut down. They have to go out with a teleporter now when they're visiting the farm, move the rocks, get in, do the farm work, and come back.
Jewellery in particular, where is that being resold? Because it could be identified.
But part of my bill is very important. There's no holding period. My bill is part of a Section 2, but it's a holding period of 1 month. Suppose I sell you jewellery or whatever, whether it's a pawn in the old days or whatever, that you have to keep that. If the bill was introduced, or legislation, or I'm going to say this is perfect, but some legislation to have a holding period of 5 days initially and a month for bigger stuff.
Is month 1 month even enough?
Maybe not. But I'm saying my bill is the expert item. I'm only a layperson with limited resources drawn up this bill. There was former Minister Shatter picked holes in the last time and literally rubbished it. But I have amended all those eight items in it, and a month isn't enough, obviously. Also then the fact of a register of every gold and cash dealer and scrap merchant. And remember, there are good gold smiths and good jewellers doing great business and honourable. They want this legislation too. Same as scrap dealers. There's good scrap merchants and everything else. But this has been a rogue trade. Like, take the Irish aviation. I dread the time that, God forbid, the two airplanes would hit in the sky, because when they go out to take down a mast at night, they don't worry whether it's an aircraft mast, an ESB mast, or one that's serving the Aer Lingus and in Dublin Airport or any place else. And the same with the Limerick Junction has been attacked several times. It's the crossroads of Munster, and the cabling has been taken out kilometres of it at a time.
Okay, so there are serious problems. But Trevor O'Clougherty of Sinn Féin, do you think this bill could actually help in lowering the amount of robberies and crimes throughout rural Ireland, for example?
Well, I think the legislation itself is important, and again, it's something that has been talked about, has been raised in the channel for the last 3 years, the cash for gold scenario. But I know as well from being on the Joint Policing Committee in Galway that this issue comes up quite a lot. One of the other issues that's come up is this cabling being stolen, copper cable, copper wire, etc. in rural areas. We have incidences of churches being broken into and the chalices, etc. being taken, and machinery off from houses, etc. But the other side of this is obviously the policing issue, and certainly in rural areas, there has been a huge decline in the Gardaí on the beat in rural areas. And I was even in a rural Garda station at the weekend, where they were complaining to me about the impact of Haddington Road on them being able to do their job at the weekends, and that was just people going in to sign passport forms, etc. So, not putting resources into rural policing is the other side of this, because there's no point having legislation if we can't enforce it.
But having said that, Lucinda Creighton, the cash for gold outlets that have sprung up over the place over the last number of years presents a scintillating opportunity for petty thieves and robbers all around throughout the country, because all they need is to take one bit of jewellery and they're away in a hack. They have the cash at the ready.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think the point is well made. I mean, it's one area of the economy that is completely without regulation. So, I welcome the bill. I think it makes sense to try to regulate it and make it more difficult for those petty criminals that you speak of, because there certainly has been a really rapid rise in numbers in the last number of years. It's pretty evident, I think.
Áine Collins, is 1 month enough, do you think, of a holding period?
Well, I think what we need to do with the gold, the cash for gold, is they need to be licensed operators, and we need to look at how we can make that happen. You also have to be always look at any kind of legislation that comes in that doesn't be too bureaucratic and make it anti-competitive and all that kind of stuff. So we need to look at that. I mean, this real problem has come up in the last number of years, where the price of copper ore has increased hugely in value. So what we have is people taking copper, remelting it, turning it into ore and selling it. So, like, how do you trace that? How do you follow that and so on? So there clearly is an issue here. I'm not sure how we deal with it or whether the bill will cover it or not. Are holding precious stones for a month, is that enough? I'm not sure. I think the copper issue is a different issue to the precious stones issue and you know, holding jewellery.
Okay.
But certainly we need to look at the licensing of gold dealers.
Finally, Matthew McGrath, do you hope your bill will be supported tomorrow under the Dáil?
Well, the last time it was in fairness to all the speakers from all sides, and none spoke in favour of the need. Not saying the bill was a perfect item. I'm hoping that again tomorrow, but unfortunately I had a briefing today. I met the minister twice, the new minister, and I wish her well, incidentally. And I met the officials today, it's going to be rejected, which is a pity. I don't mind if they took it and brought it forward to the next stage and amended it and did what they wanted. You mentioned the month. I don't want to be seen as making something too bureaucratic. I'm often complaining about too much regulation. But this area, the Georgian Society, the Irish Aviation, all the family organisations, every place, the church, buildings have been ruined.
Okay, quickly, it's been rejected. Why?
Because Minister Shatter promised his own legislation 2.5 years ago. The situation has got umpteen times worse and nothing has been done. Because, as I said, look, I'd love to know why. They said that I was a lead role on it and it was very good and would be incorporated. But when? I want to ask, how long can we wait? And it's an awful pity that, you know, that legislation like this, I've invested a lot of time. I'm not saying it's final document, but I thought it would be taken in draft. And those are the indications I got from Minister last week. Well, no, not that. To be fair to her, but that she would look at it and see. But no, it's been rejected tomorrow, and it's a pity. And we'll be there debating it. It'll be voted on then or voted down next Tuesday, which is sad. And it's not only petty criminals, it's an organised industry. The hospital, under the cameras of the Department of Justice, literally an organised team moved in there, everyone under the cameras, and just got on CCTV from the Department of Justice. I think it's the Hume Street Hospital, and it was literally wrecked over a weekend. And all put on a boat and exported under the auspices of a legitimate business. So.
Okay, fair play to Matty, says one texter. This bill is long overdue. Crime will be more difficult as a result. The rest of the Dáil backed you up on this subject. The signposts in our village were taken 2 weeks ago, says that texter. And manholes as well, says Matty McGraw. Okay, we'll leave that there. I think we've one more break to take, and then we'll examine if Ireland is a soft touch for multinational companies after the break.
RTE Radio 1.
You're welcome back to The Late Debate with Cormac O'Hara, standing in for Audrey this evening. I'm joined by Matty McGraw, Independent TD, as you can hear, Áine Collins of Fine Gael, Lucinda Creighton of the Reform Alliance, Trevor O'Clougherty of Sinn Féin, and Jim Stewart, Associate Professor of Finance in Trinity College Dublin. You can text us 51551. This week, the Joint Committee on Finance, Public Expenditure and Reform examined the effective rate of corporation tax being paid by multinational companies in Ireland. For some time, Ireland has faced international attention because of its low corporate tax rate, and we know that the European Commission is looking into how Apple deals with its taxation affairs in Ireland. Here is a clip of an Taoiseach at an EU summit talking about the multinational question in relation to taxation.
I said Ireland is to the forefront here, actually, of understanding that in the digital world, many multinational companies apply and are involved in many jurisdictions. And we are fully in agreement with working with the OECD, with our European colleagues, and with international countries in bringing a new consensus about the situation where multinationals can use different jurisdictions in respect of the tax position in those jurisdictions.
Áine Collins of Fine Gael, why doesn't the world believe him?
Well, I think a lot of people believe him, and I certainly believe him. I mean, the foreign direct investment in Ireland is very important. Our corporation tax is very open and transparent. The effective rate is about 10.8%. All companies, whether you're a foreign direct investment or an Irish Indigenous company, pay corporation tax on their profits from a trade at 12.5%. It's been a very attractive for bringing foreign direct investment into Ireland. They contribute hugely to this country. They pay 65% of all the corporation tax in this country. They employ 170,000 people directly, and probably at least another 170. If not more indirectly.
Okay, so they do an awful lot of good, you say.
Yes.
But Associate Professor of Finance in TCD, Jim Stewart, a totally open taxation policy in relation to multinationals, is that right?
Well, I wouldn't quite agree with that, but I think, Áine, some of your numbers aren't quite right. I think, also, if I could just say so, that the effective rate of tax, the actual statutory rate is 12.5%. Of course, very few companies pay 12.5%. That the one, if you look at US Bureau of Economic Analysis data, the effective rate of tax is about 2.2% in one measure, maybe 3.8% in another. I think
2.2%?
2% for US multinational companies located in Ireland, incorporated in Ireland. Now, there's a problem here because...
That's a far cry from the 8% that Áine gave.
Well, you see, a lot of the companies that are incorporated in Ireland make their claim, their tax residence is allowed by the revenue tax resident in Bermuda or the Cayman Islands. So Google, for example, has it's incorporated in Ireland, but it also has this subsidiary in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda where the tax rate is virtually zero. I think if we take the Apple case, for example, and the Google case, and this probably illustrates why Ireland is the centre of this storm, is that Apple makes about 60% of its profits outside the US, but it pays virtually no tax on those profits. I mean, one measure it's 3.7, another measure it's 1.1%. Similarly with Google and whatever. So they are paying tax, and they pay tax in the US. Apple pays about $9 billion in corporation tax, but most of this tax is in the US. A lot of countries such as France and Germany and other countries are not happy with the situation, and Australia and whatever. And they would see Ireland as facilitating this.
Now, do they see Ireland as a kind of a tax haven?
No, Ireland is not a tax haven. That's very easy to prove. Just reach into your pocket and pull out your latest monthly tax slip, and you'll see that 40% in my case goes to the revenue, the government in one form or another in terms of the deductions. Ireland has features of a tax haven, but it cannot be a pure tax haven. Now, we're not alone, because the Netherlands and Luxembourg and Switzerland, you know, there are lots of other tax havens, so we're kind of competing in this thing. I think the problem is that competition on a tax basis is not good, because the EU would say if a country gives a tax concession to one country, then that affects competition amongst companies. You take Amazon. Amazon claims if you buy a book on Amazon that the book comes from Luxembourg, because there's no VAT on PayPal in Luxembourg. They then have an unfair competition and fair advantage against booksellers operating who pay the full whack of VAT.
But if Ireland competes on tax, on its tax regime, what's wrong with that? It's not Ireland's fault, really. They're playing by the rules, aren't they? Or we are.
Well, look, if you have a tax-based industrial policy, the first point is you'll attract those companies that are here because of the favourable tax regime. And these are the very companies that are likely to have low linkages, not very well embedded in the economy. So if there's a change in the tax regime, then there's a risk that they leave. And the change in the tax regime might not be due to us. We can't control it. It's not in our gift. It might be because of the EU, or because unilateral action by Germany or France, or
Is that coming down the tracks?
I think, there's a very great risk that it is coming down the tracks. But in any case, I think it's a distraction. Like, what makes a really successful firm, a really successful economy? It's not fiddling around your tax. It's new product development, quality improvement, logistics, supply chain management, marketing. It's not tax. We're obsessed with the tax rate. And we have to remember that many companies in Ireland don't pay any tax, not because they're able to afford a very expensive tax accountants, but because they're not making any profit. We've come through a huge recession, and I think about 76% of all companies pay very little tax. 38% have, according to the revenue statistics for 2011, have either zero or negative trading profits. About 50 companies pay about 50% of corporation tax.
Okay, Lucinda Creighton, do you think the deals being doled out to multinational companies located in Ireland, are they too sweet?
Well, the simple answer is that they're not deals, they're not sweet deals. And if they're found to be sweet deals, then Ireland will be in breach of EU law. So I think that's important to state.
I have a report here from March that says Apple paid tax of $36 million on profits of $7 billion.
If you look at the taxable income of multinational companies in Ireland, it's about 40 billion, and about 4 billion is paid in corporate taxes, which is about 10%. Now, we can dispute what is deemed to be profit and what is deemed to be taxable in Ireland, but that is the figure. So across the board, multinational companies, including US multinational companies, pay approximately 10% on their profits.
Jim now, is shaking his head in disagreement.
Well, I mean, another economist will disagree with him. So you know,
the total trading profits in Ireland are 40 billion.
Jim, come forward to the mic, please.
There are different views on this, and but I'm talking about taxable profits in this.
So you totally reject Jim's figure of 2.2% as an effective tax rate?
Well, I mean, he's calculating it on the basis of profits that are not technically generated in Ireland and therefore are not taxable in Ireland. So, I mean, if a company or a subsidiary of a company is not deemed to have generated the profit in this country, then it's not taxable in this country. And I mean, we can argue about this and, you know, we can talk about it till the cows come home. But the reality is that a small country like Ireland cannot change the global taxation infrastructure. So if companies, I mean, if we want to target Apple and Google and so on, and all of these companies that employ, as Áine said, indirectly and directly, approximately 300,000 people in this country, if we want to target them and, you know, encourage them to move their European headquarters to other locations or indeed move out of the European Union entirely, that's absolutely fine. But we need to remember that we will be driving jobs out of this country. So, I mean, it's an ideological thing more than anything.
That's a fair point, Trevor, isn't it?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the Oireachtas has been drag kicking and screaming to look at this issue by Piers Doherty, who brought it up and has pushed for this committee to be set up. Because it's also important to say that the British Public Accounts Committee do see it as a tax haven, and the US Senate committee that discussed this issue around the Apple taxation see it as a tax haven.
Does Doherty and Sinn Féin want to drag these multinationals and expose them and drive possibly 250,000 jobs out of the country?
But the fact of the matter is, Cormac, that there is a movement globally at the moment that is going to push for transparency in the corporate tax system across the world. What we have here, and it goes back to a point that Jim made about the fairness, for example, of a bookseller selling books, an international multinational has the wherewithal to have tax advisors who will show them how to dodge all the tax in the different countries. The companies that are in Ireland, the SME to avoid.
The tax, yeah.
Yeah, the companies that are based in Ireland, we want a fair, basically what we want is a fair tax system. Because if a small SME is paying a corporate tax rate of 12% or even a realistic one or an effective one of 8%, surely the multinationals should be paying their fair share as well. And we know that companies like Google and Apple are making absolutely massive profits. Some of them are setting up stateless companies so they can avoid paying tax in Ireland.
Okay, Matthew McGrath, Sinn Féin says we should get our own taxation house in order now before the global movement exposes us.
Now, it's typical rhetoric from Sinn Féin. I mean, you look at the figures are out there, 161,000 people employed by multinationals. And we can't be responsible in Ireland for money that, as Lucinda has said, that's generated in other jurisdictions. We can only deal with our own area. And it's a very complex issue. But you didn't, on the other hand, have 200,000 SMEs, of which one of myself, employing an estimated 635,000 people. But therein is the issue. Many of those SMEs wouldn't be working but for their suppliers and their maintenance and their doing service industry to the multinationals. It's a very important issue. And all the staff are paying tax and all the staff of the multinationals are paying staff. And
so,
I want to say...
So why shouldn't the multinationals, Matthew, pay the same tax as the SMEs that are Irish and Indigenous?
Certainly. And we would have to have a... But the
they
more
do.
We keep...
They don't.
The rhetoric about it, and if that's what Sinn Féin's policy is going to be, to bring up these issues and force it onto... like the Roxas isn't blinded and not minded to discuss things before Sinn Féin arrived on the scene.
Why shouldn't multi-billion euro corporations pay tax?
Of course they should. And I'm not saying they're not. I won't. And I'm saying
at 12.5%.
Yes, and I'm saying how
they're not. It's according to our associate professor.
Some, I'm no disrespect to a professor, but some professors will say otherwise as well. So I'm talking about in the broader context.
So you're doubting the credibility of his evidence.
I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm looking at my own county of Tipperary and West Waterford. We have huge, up to 4,000 jobs. Direct foreign investment jobs in the likes of Merck, Sharp & Dohme, who have been here for 30 years, a leading pharmaceutical company. And then all the time, as I mentioned, they get more patents and more money invested in R&D and get more stuff on patent. And we have to think of all the service industry and the spend in the locality.
I think we have to be very careful. I mean, the focus... For me and for, I hope, for most of the majority of my colleagues in the Oireachtas, has to be about creating jobs and ensuring that we maintain the jobs that we have in this country through foreign direct investment. But we also have to look at the tax structures in terms of how we encourage small and medium-sized companies to grow and to thrive in this country. And frankly, you know, there isn't a huge amount happening in that respect at the moment. About 15% of the Irish public are employed through foreign direct investment. About 70% through SMEs with huge potential for more. Sinn Féin is focusing on, you know, how can we target foreign direct investment in this country almost for some ideological reason to try and drive them out of this country. Well, in fact, we should be talking about tax incentives for small companies in this country to take on additional staff, grow their businesses. Yeah. Instead, we have a government that's currently providing tax incentives to invest in property rather rather than investing.
Trevor and then Anya.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a complete misrepresentation
businesses.
Of what I said. What I said is that we need
No, I don't mean you. I mean your party.
Well,
your party
I'm speaking on behalf of the party, and this is the party policy, is that we're looking for a fair taxation system. And Lucinda was a Minister for State for European Affairs, as far as I remember, when the French were actually saying that they had huge questions about what the effective rate of taxation
And we worked very hard to bat it away. Very, very hard,
well,
I can tell
it's,
you.
It's quite clear that the other international players, such as the US Senate and the British government, have certainly doubt and they certainly question the efficacy of the analysis that's being done by you.
But at the end of the day, Anya Collins of Fine Gael, we're being laughed at. Our taxation policy is being laughed at internationally, is it not?
Cormac, I wouldn't agree with you at all. I think in actual fact, I mean, we're looked at globally as being a great model for what we do here. We have eight out of the ten largest companies in the world based in Ireland. They're not here just because of tax. Because the reality is...
What are they here for?
Seamus Coffey, who's the UCC economist, has done a report on this. And he says the most effective rate of tax that has been paid on average over the last 10 years is 10.5%. And it's based on the CSO measure by the Irish Revenue. So, I mean, there are the other facts, and I'm not disputing them.
Let me read to you a snippet from an RTE report when Ann Taoiseach, Enda Kenny, your leader, was in California, and Jerry Brown, the governor of California, is referred to here. The report says he, Jerry Brown, joked that he always thought Apple was a California company, but said that if you looked at their tax returns, they're really an Irish company. The gathered crowd of about 300 people laughed loudly. He said it was creative accounting and added, "I won't go there," to which there was more laughter.
For a start, he's a US senator who's looking at the fact that there's American multinationals setting up in other parts of the world, and maybe they would prefer them to stay in America because they have their own issues to deal with there.
But the fact of the matter is, Fine Gael said that they'd restore Ireland's reputation abroad.
But when
the Taoiseach goes abroad, we're being laughed at.
The global world and the way it looks at Ireland and the effect we've made around the world and how the amount of business that's coming here, how we are viewed. Go and talk to these people. Look at the multinationals around the world that have Irish CEOs because they've set up business here and the Irish people have grown into that role. Our skill set is the main reason why they're
okay,
here.
Okay, Lucinda,
and because of where we're based.
The Senate committee that you're referring to is the committee involving Senator Levin, Senator McCain and other high-profile US senators. And can I quote Senator McCain? This is what he said about the situation in America in terms of corporate taxes vis-a-vis Ireland. He said, right now, the United States of America pays the second highest business taxes in the world, 35%. Ireland pays 11%. Now, if you're a business person and you can locate any place in the world, then obviously if you go to the country where it's 11% tax versus 35%, you're going to be able to create jobs, increase your business, make more investment, etc. That's what John McCain said.
Yeah, but
so
you're just making Jim Stewart's
stock.
Point. You're just simply making Jim Stewart's point.
That we're a good place to do business and create
absolutely.
Jobs.
He said that.
From the point of view of the world.
Jim point,
and
Sinn Féin
wants to terminate
your
that.
Point earlier on, that when you have a low tax, corporate tax rate, you have low linkages with the country, no loyalty whatsoever. Is that the point?
This debate is unreal because there are tax changes coming down the track. They're not under our gift.
Correct.
We can't decide we won't have this or we'll have that. The EU and the OECD are introducing changes. And one of the reasons they're introducing changes because there are huge problems with the international tax system. Can I just give you a quote? Apple were asked, where are you located? Their Apple subsidiary in Cork were asked by the Senate committee, where are you located? And they replied, we have not made a determination as to where we are located, but we have made a determination that we're not located in Ireland. Now, this is just gobbledygook, and it's just not acceptable
anymore. Sorry, what does that mean? Or what's their intention? What's their aim in responding like that?
Their aim in responding like that is to say, is they're stateless. Now, there has been a change in the Irish legislation in Section 39 of the Finance Bill of 2013, but that doesn't remove the other problem is that you can have companies incorporated in Ireland but located in another jurisdiction. And by the way, this is exceptional because Apple, it claims to be, and other companies, they claim that they're incorporated here, that they're not taxed elsewhere. They have employees here, they pay VAT, they have because they have employees, they pay PRSI. If you're incorporated, your auditor must be located here, your registered office must be located here. But the revenue is saying, no, no, as regards corporation tax and the corporation tax base, you're not here at all.
Okay, Brendan in Dublin says, Ireland is not a tax haven, irrespective of the US Senate's view. The issue of tax avoidance by US multinationals is directly related to the US tax code,
correct,
which does not tax their profits if they are not repatriated. They could change this at the stroke of a pen, he says.
And US senators acknowledge that, but nobody has had the courage, I suppose, in US politics to actually change it. So it's easy to point the finger at what we're doing in Ireland or what's happening in the global taxation structures because the US administration has failed to tax companies who generate profits in the US. And as I understand it, Apple, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing with a lot of what Jim is saying, as I understand it, Apple has a deferred tax liability of about $35 billion to the United States of America. Whether they pay it or not is a matter for the United States. It's not necessarily a matter for us.
Not a concern.
What we know is that they're employing 4,000 people in Cork, and from my point of view, I don't want to lose those jobs from this country.
Okay,
there are a lot of families dependent on those.
Just a moment, Martin in Dublin, I'll bring you in just a moment, Trevor. Martin in Dublin says, has our government even contemplated what would happen to jobs if we are forced to amend our corporation tax rate, or indeed if other countries such as Britain and Germany matched our rate? If Germany or Britain had our rate, then Google, etc. wouldn't be here.
But you also have to look at the jobs.
We're
only looking here at the jobs in these big multinational companies. What about the jobs in the Irish SMEs and the other indigenous companies? Those companies that are paying a fair tax rate, that are being screwed by the cost of rates, that haven't been getting a fair break. We're seeing
the one thing, but we
do know that these big multinationals are making massive profits. Through the last number of years of austerity, we've seen EU citizens get hammered, we've seen SMEs get hammered and go to the wall.
They're providing good jobs, though.
Yes. They are providing good jobs, but they're also making massive profits on the back of it. And all we're calling for is that those profits be taxed properly and that they pay their fair share of tax.
But the counterbalance, if you make them pay, the jobs might be there.
I don't agree with that. I don't think that will happen.
Because Jim is living in a fantasy land.
That's absolutely rubbish. Because Jim has mentioned
the
talent base,
tax is 10.5%.
The fact that we're an English-speaking gateway into the EU. There are an awful lot of other factors as well that a company will take into consideration when they want to base here.
I totally agree that Sinn Féin are in a fantasy land here. I mean, we must look at small SMEs and support them. One job per SME, 200,000, would have the dole queues at the moment. I wish to Sinn Féin, who are very successful at fundraising in the US, would actually encourage these companies to be here instead of attacking them. And some of our left colleagues in the Dáil as well, all the time, the left-wing parties are just fantasy about this and they don't understand the situation. As I said earlier, about the number of SMEs who are directly employed or indirectly employed by the multinationals.
What's wrong with asking a few questions?
I have no problem with questions.
Is there
no,
a culture of deference in Dáil Éireann in regard to these multinationals?
No, there's not, but I mean...
When is the last time we've had a senior executive from a multinational before an ethics committee?
Yeah, but they have been in. They have been in quite recently. Quite recently. I'm not on the committee. Not very regularly, but they have.
Do we want the jobs?
Or do we want to have stability or don't we? Or do we want to wreck our economy and hunt everybody away? And then we'll Sinn Féin turn for the fundraising when they go
Collins.
To some other country.
I think, while we're talking about this, it's always good to ask questions and look at it. But I think if we're really serious about the economy, we need a two-prong approach. Obviously, we need the foreign nationals here, and I certainly welcome them, and I welcome the indirect jobs we do. And as Lucinda referred to, we also need the SMEs, and there's quite a lot of them in every town and every county in Ireland. And there, you know, there were 61,000 jobs created last year. Only 7,000 of those were foreign direct investment companies. So 85% of all the new jobs are going to come from existing companies, Irish indigenous companies growing, and startups. And we do need to look at that. And we have done some great work on it. We've brought in microfinance. We've brought in state guarantee. We've brought in where you get PRSI exemption when you take on somebody who's been unemployed for 2 years. But there is a lot more we can do.
But why not be proactive, Jim Stewart's point? Why not be proactive in relation to this? Because we have changes coming down the line, the consolidated tax base, which could change everything, really.
Well, we have done some of this already in the budget. When Jim refers to stateless companies, we have changed that in last year's budget. I mean, we're very
open. Around the edges, really.
No, but we're very open. I mean, I've just already... I mean, it seems to me, Cormac, that you're taking one point of view here. I mean, the CSO figure is 10.5% is what corporation tax is being paid in Ireland. Now, Jim is talking about 2.2% and all of this, right? That's a blended rate because we have global companies around the world who are paying a blended rate. It's very complex, and I think, you know, we need to have the facts here. As I said, Seamus Coffey, who's the UCC professor, he might differ on you, but you're both economists, would not agree with Jim. He has completely said the complete opposite.
Okay, well,
so I think we have to have, you know, balance on this.
Let's bring in Jim Stewart, and I totally deny your accusation, by the way. way. Jim Stewart, the fact of the matter is that experts differ, and why not put our best foot forward in this situation until there is a change, until there is a consolidated base that actually changes, or even tax harmonisation, that actually changes the situation for us.
What do you mean by putting our best foot forward?
Leaving things as they are, attracting to comply. FDI.
We have to comply with international laws and international regulations.
And we're happy to do so.
Yeah.
Because and these are going to change. So removing the stateless state, removing the stateless ability of companies, that is kind of irrelevant because these companies can simply reorganise themselves if they're taxed in Bermuda or Cayman Islands. There's very little difference between the tax strategies of Google and Apple. I mean, Apple was claimed to be stateless.
Are you saying we're not complying?
We are complying, but there's change going to come down the route. Going to come down
what's important here is the fact that Piers Doherty has asked for this committee to be set up, has asked for the heads of those multinationals to come into the committee, and it's fair to say that he's been blocked when he's trying to bring in the top people from Apple and Google to clarify the situation. Let's ask them the questions. Let's see what's really happening there. And also, just on the fantasy...
Is the rise of Sinn Féin putting the fear of God into
absolutely,
multinationals?
Absolutely, and I think can I just address the fantasy economics bit? It's quite interesting that the people around the table here are talking about the fantasy economics of Sinn Féin.
Well,
if we look at the wealth tax, Matty, we've been proposing the wealth tax for years, and now we see the Labour are coming out and saying that they're agreeing with us. And it was very interesting yesterday to listen to Pat Rabbit changing the terms for the oil and gas licensing after we've been calling for that for years, going very much closer to what Sinn Féin have been calling for years.
Lucinda.
And it's about time the rest of the people here saw
the light. We've seen the success of a wealth tax in France, and if that's Sinn Féin's answer to growing the Irish economy, I really fear for the future.
It's about taxing.
Hopefully Sinn Féin will not be in government to implement that or any of the other fantasy policies.
The citizens will decide on that one. Well,
80% of the tax in Ireland is paid by 20% of the individuals.
Yes, because they're well able to pay.
We've had I'm going to give the last word to Matty and then Jim, quickly.
I'm very concerned about Sinn Féin and their policies. I think the sooner they're put into government, the better. And let us see then where we go and clear the air, because they'll be found out when they have to come up with policies and we'll have to implement difficult issues. It won't be all this fantasy, as I said, and driving away foreign direct investment. That's what we're doing. And if Piers Doherty's claiming that has been a credit and a great day's work, I say God help us.
Okay, Jim Stewart, very finally and briefly, within a minute or so, do you think what you're proposing, that changes should be implemented to our taxation regime, do you accept that they probably won't happen under this government or any government not involving Sinn Féin?
I think it's not so much that changes need to be made to our tax regime. Changes need to be made to our industrial policy. Our industrial policy, based on attracting multinational companies based on tax, which is subject to change in other countries, this is very risky, because we don't control those changes. Now, in addition, there are other effects that are not quite so good. We become a very tax-driven economy. Those who give tax advice become very important in advising companies and advising the government. We need to have tax. We need to raise tax, and we need to have a broad-based tax system.
OK, the final word to the listeners. Multinationals employ 170,000, while SMEs employ 630,000 under a relatively far harsher tax regime. Upward only rents in pursuit of rates for small business. No such vigour for multinationals. And finally, Murish de Wolf in Kilchoca in Cundey Hildara says the US politicians' elections are funded by these companies. They make the US tax laws to suit their benefactors. To criticise a third party for using what they have set up is gross hypocrisy. Indeed. That, of course, is not unique to US politicians, he said. Mwichas, La Anya Collins, Lucinda Creighton, Matty McGrath, Trevor O'Cluckerdeeg, Jim Stewart, Jedda Leshin Glorishnulna, Guji and Shachtin Shogan, adios.
Karma.
On what?
The Late Debate, presented by Cormac O'Hara, was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. The researcher is Richie Byrne. And sound supervision tonight was by Gar Duffy.